What's up, you guys? Sean Ross at FightfulSelect.com here for the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. It is a busy one, not just with the exclusives from Fightful, but a lot of contract notes, a lot of injury notes as well. Let's go ahead and get into the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. Big E debuted his new theme on SmackDown recently to positive reception and reaction, but it was not him who pushed for the new theme. It was WWE's office, from what we were told, and it was pushed for long ago, like way back in the summer. We learned that Big E did want Wale to do the theme specifically, however, which does lend some more credibility to the word that we had been given that WWE is open to input when changing these themes for wrestlers over the last several months. We've seen a lot of theme songs change to get away from the CFO's themes because of some of the licensing associated with that, but I also got word that this theme was supposed to debut months ago, around the time of the Big E Sheamus feud that happened. But there needed to be some tweaks made to the song. But overall, I think it was a hit. I think that it was well received. And for a theme that has been as familiar as New Day's, and the fact that that group did not want to split up necessarily, I think that this was a hell of an alternative, especially when you got Wale, who has, one, a big wrestling fan. Two, has been associated with New Day in the past as a part of that rap battle with the Usos. I think this made a lot of sense. And I think that in a situation where so much of the new themes are hit or miss, and sometimes people are going to love them, sometimes people are going to hate them, I think that this, pivoting to this one, pretty good move on WWE's part, pretty good move on Big E's part. I mean, you know, we will always identify Big E with New Day, and I'm sure that he wants that as well, but this is a great way to differentiate. It's something that we had asked for Roman for a long time. People always asking about Tessa Blanchard. There were some questions sent my way about Tessa Blanchard's status after she was announced for a December signing and on the graphic was listed as a part of AAA. Based on what we'd heard, she's not nailed down to a AAA contract and is taking time away from the ring. In that same vein, Charlotte Flair has taken some time away from the ring, and if you are upset over NXT's handling of Charlotte earlier this year, you are definitely not alone, but it might not necessarily be their fault. I was told that oftentimes NXT would come up with creative or plans for Charlotte Flair when she appeared on their brand, but it would need to go through Raw and then would get shot down. Now, originally, Rhea Ripley was planned to win the match between the two, and then it was changed to Charlotte. There was a big push within NXT to have Bianca Belair added even sooner than she was so that the feud could see Charlotte lose the match without taking the pin, which is still what we saw eventually, just at In Your House. Now, that is just a major shift. Like, almost everything that happened with Charlotte in her 2020 was not supposed to happen. Shayna Baszler was supposed to win the Royal Rumble. Charlotte Flair, then, after she did win the Royal Rumble, was supposed to lose at WrestleMania. That didn't happen. And then there were supposed to be some big grand plan for Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair to where it would quote-unquote make sense. Now, Triple H has said, oh, well, the world changed. Man, you knew that in June. You knew that in June, that the world was different and the world was changing, and you still didn't pin her. That has to be run back at some point and retcon, so to speak. But one wrestler in NXT that we spoke to about the situation responded in a very pessimistic manner, saying that those involved in the creative of NXT should have known what they were getting into when they booked it as even a possibility. And it's hard for me to disagree with that, considering the fact that we have seen how Charlotte's booked. Now, granted, I'm a lot more lenient on that than a lot of wrestling fans are, because I like Charlotte Flair's work. I think that she is a mega, mega, mega star. But I don't think that you needed to compromise Rhea Ripley for this. I think it would have been a great time to really solidify her. But the booking of Rhea Ripley, once she got the title, was terrible. It was terrible. She became that smiley, jokey, heh-heh, well person that they've always done with babyface champions after the coronation. It's like, oh, we got the title. Now it's time to have some fun. It's so weird. Ooh, let's get into a story that has really surprised a lot of people. My God. Wrestling Observer and PW Insider had reported that several WWE big men were sent down to the performance center, not full time, but Tuesdays and Thursdays to work with Drew Gulak and Adam Pearce. Those that we spoke to say that many were told to keep this quiet for obvious reasons, but it inevitably leaked. The names we've heard so far are Otis, Omos, Dabba Kato, Dio Madden, who plays Mace in Retribution, and Keith Lee. And I'm told there's supposed to be more, but this was not related to any heat on any specific wrestler. But I did ask a bunch of people about why these people were sent down, about what they thought about this move, all that. Now, obviously, the big outrage was Keith Lee. And that was understandable, and the locker room was understandably confused. They said that they think that Keith Lee was just lumped in because of his size, and they feel like if he were a smaller guy, he probably wouldn't have been there. And this was a big guy edict, so to speak. Now, again, these aren't specific reasons necessarily as much as it is talent saying what they have heard and talent repeating to me things that they know to be true in speaking with these wrestlers as well. So these are sometimes secondhand accounts of this situation. You got Dabba Kato, he was playing for Raw Underground, and since that was nixed, I've been told that there were no firm plans for him. Arturo Huas was mentioned in the original report, and I'm not sure why. I mean, he was sent back down, yeah, but there were completely different plans for Arturo Huas. There were actual, honest-to-God, creative plans for that guy. And for Dabba Kato, there have not been. And since then, they sent him back there to learn a little bit more so he could learn how to work. But he's been at the PC for like 5 years, or several years at the very least. Omos has been there for 2 years, 2.5 years. And they planned to have this guy on Raw WrestleMania season and did not do much to prepare him for that spot from an in-ring perspective. He's had like 6 matches and is said to either need a whole lot of work or some major smoke and mirrors at this point. Very well liked backstage. I should reiterate that as well. People go on and on about how great this guy is and how nice he is and that he's willing to learn. It's just sometimes it doesn't always add up. So they got him there as well. You have Otis, another guy who's well-liked backstage, but there were a couple of spots that I heard about in recent months that got the attention of people at Gorilla Position that believed Otis could be safer in the ring. Now, there's, of course, the belief that there's high upside in Otis, and again, well-liked, but I know that one of those was a spot with John Morrison that looked a little rough, that some people backstage in WWE were like, ah, that could have been real bad. But I wasn't told that there was any heat with that or anything. Dio Madden, Mace, a lot of the people that I spoke to chalked up him being sent there because he was out of the ring for the majority of a year after he was taken out of the Raw broadcast team. He did some live event matches for NXT earlier this year, but it wasn't like a ton. So he had been out of the ring for like 11 out of 12 months. But I mean, everybody speaks highly of his athleticism and all that. I'm going to work to find out more about if there's anybody else that was there that maybe shouldn't be there, quite frankly. We'll find out. Well, we found out a little bit about Lee Moriarty. We got some Ring of Honor news. He told me that he was supposed to be in Ring of Honor twice this year, but both were prevented by COVID. He was set for a Future of Honor appearance before COVID sidelined things and put that on hold. Then he was set for a block of tapings that were prevented this past fall. Those that we spoke to in ROH, there's still hope to bring him in the future. And Alex Shelley had put in a good word for him to get Moriarty booked for the Future of Honor spot, and also put in a good word for him to get booked in Impact Wrestling. Alex Shelley recommended he and Ben Carter and others to higher-ups, and it was his first television experience, and he mentioned, he being Lee Moriarty, that Chris Bay specifically helped him with adjusting to wrestling and helping find the cameras, said that Tommy Dreamer and Matt Stryker were great at giving advice as well. Those are the types of things that I really like to hear. Lee Moriarty is a very reserved guy when you speak to him. Clearly has a great mind for wrestling and developing and just perfecting his art. So it's good to see that other people are taking note of that and going to bat for him as well. And we've seen him explode this year as far as his profile goes. While we're on the subject of Ring of Honor, I had an interview with LSG, which working to recover some of the video on that. Got a little bit of an error on the file, but he spoke really highly about the changes in production, notably those who are doing the camera work. He said to us that the shows carry a different intensity without a crowd, and a lot of adjustments have to be made. But they say that there's a huge effort on ROH to change production and take input specifically from wrestlers over the last year, which we have covered heavily over really, gosh, the last 6 months since we found out about that meeting that Ring of Honor set up. Well, EC3, we had an interview with him. Usually I post these before the interview, but it came together pretty quick. But he indicated us that he'd be free up again when 2021 hits. But he also noted to me after our interview dropped, after he was revealed to have COVID, he plans on coming back to Ring of Honor in 2021. And he wants to fulfill his story with Jay Briscoe. He specified to me, yes, that's how I roll. I'm going to make sure to see this through. That's how I am creatively. I owe that to him. I owe that to ROH. I owe that to fans to come through and see this story through, even though I couldn't deliver it to them at Final Battle. He also said that he is on good terms with Impact Wrestling and said that the two have had talks and seemed interested in a long-term deal, but he wasn't sure if he actually wanted to be nailed down long-term. But knows that eventually something's going to have to give with Impact or Ring of Honor. He was never under an Impact contract. He came in briefly. They knew he was going to last through Bound for Glory. And then he went over to Ring of Honor. And Ring of Honor knew that he was going to last probably through the end of the year, maybe January. And knew that they would have to talk then. He did reveal that a lot of the stuff with Moose was changed. It was supposed to be a regular wrestling match. Then about halfway through, it was turned into a cinematic match. And they actually filmed their own cinematic match. Moose and EC3 did. But Impact wanted to do things a certain way. And there's a whole version that's left on the cutting room floor. Although I think that he did post some video of it. We talked about his concussion issues. He said that before the one he sustained that sidelined him for much of 2019 and early 2020, he had suffered one in the summer of 2019 as well and didn't know it at the time. And his appearance started to change and was told to get tested. He has been through a whole lot of concussion-related issues from his first call-up to WWE to training to a couple last years, so I'm sure that's something that he's cognizant of as well. We spoke at length about the Jon Moxley stuff. I mean, at length and very introspective. It's not something that I've heard him go as in-depth about as far as the future. He's brought up about how things changed on the loop, about how he was supposed to get cheered and Moxley was supposed to get booed and it didn't work out, but I asked EC3 how it made him feel when by the time that interview with Moxley dropped, he wasn't being used. And he said that validated was a good word and it was a bit of a tip of the cap, but he couldn't put too much stock into it because it's just one man's opinion. And that's not always as good of an endorsement as it is and how much he respects Jon Moxley's work and likes his work and likes him personally. He couldn't put too much into it because he knew that wouldn't change a whole lot. He does have a very good creative outline for the potential of a Moxley EC3 feud, where EC3 then blames Moxley for his WWE shortcomings as a result of that interview. EC3 specifically says the psycho boy version of EC3 that isn't willing to accept responsibility or blame WWE. Instead, he's like, Jon Moxley, you brought me up. That got me heat. That got me off TV. It fucked up my life. It fucked up my career. And we have seen Jon Moxley thrive with stuff like this. I think it's one of the better stories that can be told for Jon Moxley out there right now. Even if AEW doesn't sign a guy like EC3, I think that story would make a whole lot of sense for a bunch of different reasons. I'll probably end up talking to EC3 in like January or February again. We went over 50 minutes, and I didn't get through a third of the topics that I wanted to cover because we talked about the Moxley stuff. We talked about him coming into Impact Wrestling. We talked about his cinematic match and what did and didn't happen there. We talked about him going into ROH and his program with Jay Briscoe. We talked about whether or not he was going to sign a contract, if he even wanted to be long-term, how that would work out. Talked about the creative aspect of the quote-unquote narrative that he has going on right now. And really, whether or not he likes to explain that stuff or whether or not he likes it to be subtle and work out on its own. And, I mean, we covered so much stuff. Concussion issues. The NXT reality show. And the heat that he got with Daniel Bryan for doing one of those. Shooting Softly. We covered that as well. So lots more to get into with EC3. Unfortunately, he's always generous with his time with us. We have a ton of inactive and injury updates. Aleister Black has not wrestled since October, even after being drafted to the SmackDown brand. Lars Sullivan has not appeared since the November 6th SmackDown. Don't know what's going on there, just told it wasn't an injury that they know of. Seth Rollins had paternity leave in late November, and Becky Lynch had her child. She has been out since May 11th. Congratulations to them. Cesaro returned. He had not wrestled since October. He's back in action. Bobby Fish, tricep surgery after War Games. He's expected back in February. We had some returns, though. Malcolm Bivens officially returned, not just in the background, but officially returned. Gave his car, or kind of had a business proposal for Tyler Rust. That's not the only Tyler we see popping up. Tyler Bate finally back in action after being out since March, since really the pandemic started. Good to see him back. Several names pulled from Final Battle because of COVID protocol. By the way, that was taped on Friday. EC3, Flamita, Bandido, and Kenny King. So EC3 was supposed to face Jay Briscoe. That is not happening. Flamita and Bandido were supposed to join Ray Horace and take on Shane Taylor Promotions for to defend their six-man tag team titles. Quite frankly, I think it'd be a really good heel move if Shane Taylor Promotions just beat that one guy for the titles. I think that would make a lot of sense and be really good. The EC3 Jay Briscoe thing. Well, I mean, you got Mark Briscoe and PCO challenging for the tag team titles. I would really rather see Jay in there than PCO. And you could kind of move PCO around somewhere else. Hope they all get better soon. Carl Fredericks was also pulled from a New Japan show. And we have a bunch of contract updates. Alexa Bliss revealed recently that she is signed for 3 or 3.5 more years. So that's at least through 2023. We have some contracts that are sort of set to expire, at least per report. Now, this does not mean that they are definitely set to expire. Extensions may have been signed. We got Hiroshi Tanahashi, Yuji Nagata in New Japan, Ryu Lee, Kenny King, Roosh in Ring of Honor, Sami Callihan, Ethan Page, and Jake Crist in 2021. I will have a lot more on the Impact deals very, very soon. And of course, Alex Shelley is still working without a contract. And Davey Boy Smith has left MLW. Guys, thank you all so much. We are working hard to give you a lot of exclusive news at FightfulSelect.com. Hope you guys like it. Until next time, we're out.